Thanks, Carl, and glad to be here with you all. I wanted to talk tonight about liberation in relationships, all kinds of relationships, romantic, neighbors, friends, family, and partly because that's just what I'm thinking a lot about. My friend Renee Rivera and I are actually teaching a four-part class series on this in September at East Bay Meditation Center, which I can share a little bit more about later, if folks are interested. And I have a cat sitting here next to me if you're hearing some strange sounds. It's a creature I'm in relationship with in this moment. Partly how I think about relationship and Dharma, I actually first came to Dharma practice in my 20s due to the suffering I was feeling in a failed romantic relationship. That's how I got here. And not long after trying to understand what happened in that relationship, I was pretty quickly looking at my family conditioning and seeing how I was trained in my family to be in the world in ways that were never very functional. Some of that is pretty basic. I come from a white Midwestern family that was extremely conflict avoidant. And really, we had a hard time sharing any of our feelings, but especially any hard feelings like anger, fear, sadness, disappointment. In my family, if someone does take the risk of sharing one of those feelings, everyone else runs away and hides. Or occasionally, someone would escalate with their own feelings. So there's some kind of like anger duel that's about to start if someone shares their feelings. And I know families and cultures can be really different around conflict. So maybe you're lucky and your family taught you about conflict perfectly. Maybe there's someone here you can teach me about that. But I know in a lot of spaces that I'm in, and especially a lot of Buddhist spaces, seem to have developed some of this conflict avoidance as a way to bypass some of the more complicated parts of being in a relationship. So even if your family taught you something different, I'm guessing we're all in some spaces where there's a need to work on how to do liberation in relationship. And I really think that practice in relationship feels like a core part of the Buddha's teaching, even though, we often do practice that feels more personal, like the meditation practice that we started with. When we think about the wider set of practices that the Buddha teaches about, say in the Eightfold Path, the Buddha offers a lot of relational practice for us. We have wise speech, how to speak with each other. We have wise action, how to act in the world, wise livelihood, how to choose and how to be in our working relationships in a way where we can practice ethically in the way that we show up. We also have the three jewels of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, our embodied wisdom, the teachings, and community as three key aspects to support our liberation. So, community relationship feels like a key part of what we're here to do. And when I think about relationship, I always appreciate this teaching that you may have heard from the Buddha when his disciple Ananda described spiritual friendship as half of the holy life. And when the Buddha heard Ananda say this, he got really angry. He's like, Ananda, that's not true. Don't say that. Spiritual friendship is actually the whole of the holy life. So it's spiritual friends who keep us focused on practice in honest ways. But that requires us to be willing to be honest with each other. And so in this class I'm teaching with Renee this September, we're going to really get into some direct practice with giving and receiving feedback, identifying our own needs and setting boundaries, creating cultures of accountability, and making apologies. And I'll share some touchstones about that here so we can get a sense of what I mean. So I'm curious, when you hear the word feedback, what's your immediate embodied response?
Negative.
Right? Thanks, Jacob. Right? So like, for some of us, it might be negative. For some, you might be curious or like leaning in to listen, like, ooh, what's there? If you're like me, I might have a little more of a defended response, but I'm trying to look cool and do something that's more relaxed and open. So I think this is a place where our practices of mindfulness and detachment from ego are really helpful, because we can pay attention to how we show up even thinking about feedback, even though we're not talking about anybody getting direct feedback here. We're just talking about it in a theoretical way. Can notice, oh, even the word feedback, how do we respond to that? And through our experience that we've been developing from our practice on the cushion, we have more chance to be honest about how we're showing up and more openness that we don't have to keep showing up the same way. That could change. This way that we're showing up doesn't define who we are in a permanent way. There's a lot of space for flexibility. In terms of feedback, I'm currently mentoring some aspiring mindfulness teachers in a program that's led by Jack Kornfield and Tara Brach. And our mentoring group that meets monthly has a very structured process to offer feedback after each student shares a meditation practice with us, where we go through four rounds of practice where people offer feedback for themselves and then hear feedback from other students in the group. We do a round of positive feedback, what's working, what you should continue, and then some constructive feedback, what landed poorly, what you could try next time. And as I framed it with my students, this opportunity for feedback is really golden, because you really rarely get an opportunity to hear how your instruction lands for people. Especially if you're in a learning space, you actually want to know what's working and what you need to work on. And we're pretty intentional here about giving that balance of positive feedback and constructive feedback. And it's really interesting to feel how hard it is for people to take in and stay focused on positive feedback if they've just given meditation instructions and they're kind of swimming in all the negative thoughts they have about themselves. But it's also true that after doing it a few times, I can really feel how we're cultivating a community that values the flow of feedback, which can make space for other forms of feedback to flow as well. A key form of feedback that can feel more tricky to share is what we often call a boundary. And I love this definition of boundary that comes from Prentice Hemphill, who was formerly the healing director with Black Lives Matter. And Prentice says, boundaries are the distance at which I could love you and me simultaneously. Now, certainly in this time of the COVID pandemic, we're all thinking and communicating a lot about physical boundaries, right? We're thinking about maintaining 6 foot distances. We're thinking about where we're having our masks on and where we can take them off. We're thinking about who it's possible to hug and who we might still need to keep some distance from. Those are all boundary conversations. Now, emotionally, I also think about boundaries as a place where I need to clearly communicate and establish my own needs, even when they feel at odds with the needs of another person or group. And my partner and I have been in couples therapy for the last year. And when we have conflicting needs and don't just want to be at a distance with each other, we often ask, how can we be on the same team so that we can actually get these different needs met, even if they feel conflicting? And in terms of Dharma, it feels like this is a place where this line from the Satipatthana Sutra, this sutra on the four foundations of mindfulness, for me really comes to life. Because it's about bringing mindfulness internally, externally, and both internally, externally together. So I'm paying attention to what's going on for me, what's going on for you, and what's going on for me and you together. And so this final word that Renee and I are using in this framework, accountability, for me feels like an underlying framework and ethics that really undergirds how we show up for ourselves and others. And there's this great video series on building accountable communities where these two folks, Kiyomi Fujikawa and Shannon Perez Darby, share this definition of accountability. That accountability is taking responsibility for your choices and the consequences of those choices. And to me, this sense of accountability matches really well with teachings on karma. And I'm reading Bhante Gunaratna's book on the Eightfold Path, Eight Mindful Steps to Happiness. And in his chapter on wise effort, he talks about every moment we have a choice about whether to embrace wholesomeness or unwholesomeness. We're not helpless, passive victims of fate. We're not pawns moved about by greater forces. Nor do our experiences happen due to predetermination. Now, this is where it feels almost exactly like this definition of accountability. He says, in this moment, we choose. And then in the next moment, we experience the results of that choice along with the continuing effects of past choices. So there's really a lot of space for us in Dharma and in this, to really take accountability for our own choices and what impacts they have. And I'll say, as someone who can get overly focused sometimes on other people's needs at the expense of my own, I've really appreciated conversations about right-sized accountability. I feel like we most often talk about under accountability, where someone has caused harm and won't show up to be responsible for that harm. But it's also true that over accountability can be a problem where someone has caused harm and then creates a big production trying to demonstrate how responsible they are, essentially recentering themselves in that demonstration of accountability. And so how do we know whether we're showing up too much, too little, To me, this is where, again, community, where our Sangha is really helpful. It's really the whole of the holy life, and it helps actually keep us on this middle path. Not too much, not too little, but finding that balanced perspective. I feel like I would just want to pause there and see if there's like curiosity or question that we could take a turn with here. There's a lot more I could share.
I don't know if I have a question, but the techniques involved with nonviolent communication mm-hmm. are things that I've found very, very valuable. I was curious if what you think of those or if you incorporate those. And the other thing that just had me thinking for a moment, you were talking about in your group, you had positive feedback and constructive feedback. And it just got me thinking for a second that, you know, sort of the opposite of positive is negative, but it's positive and constructive. And then and I just jokingly said to myself, is that conflict avoidance? but more, it sort of raised the question, you know, what do we mean when we say positive? And it implies the positive than the negative, but can't it all be constructive, you know, without a duality of the good and the bad? So those are just some thoughts that your great talk got me thinking about.
Thanks, John. In some ways I feel like I come of a generation where nonviolent communication feels just embedded into how people are working. So I'm like, well, yes. but I feel like, I feel like it's of use to continue to think about how to continue to speak skillfully and embed those tools in. So I feel like if that's a tool that folks are finding useful, I don't know that I'm specifically trained in it, but I feel like I've had the benefit of it just being woven in a lot of ways that folks have done work over the last period of time that I've gotten to learn from. So I've appreciated that. I do think that it's interesting, the positive feedback and the constructive feedback, Are those opposites, or are those two dimensions that try to get at different kinds of feedback? I almost want to give the positive a different name, because I think what we're often trying to get to in the positive feedback is mostly what you should keep doing. What I found useful, what you should keep doing, which, you know, doesn't have to necessarily be a positive frame, but is like, yes, more of this. And I do feel like the constructive feedback covers both feedback that is like, please do not do this again, at least from my take. But also covers feedback that's like, hey, here's an idea that you might try. So it kind of tries to cover a couple of different things. But it might be conflict avoidant to not just call it negative feedback. I would also say that people feel so uncomfortable in positive feedback. Not everyone, but a lot of people do. That's also a real thing. Deborah, were you trying to say something also?
Yes, I was going to say, I was remembering a place that I used to work, and during our training, they encouraged us, they called it fearless feedback, and we were encouraged to both give fearless feedback and accept fearless feedback, because there is that element of fear, you know, how's it going to be taken, right? And then I just made some notes because I was trying to remember, it was a while ago, but we were encouraged to always give and receive feedback with open receptivity. Mm-hmm. And then whether it was either positive or, you know, negative feedback, we were to do it kindly and offer honest information with the intention that it would be for the benefit of the whole. So of course this is a retail environment, but nonetheless, I still think about that. Like if I'm, you know, what's that thing? If you say something, like, does it need to be said? Mm-hmm. And does it benefit, you know, what's the benefit? So anyway, that's just my, mm-hmm. that's my feedback on the feedback.
Thank you.
Dawn, I have a question, and I've been thinking for various reasons a lot about shame lately.
Yeah.
And so given you know the prevalence of shame everywhere, and shame is kind of, once shame kind of gets invoked, then there's this negative void that certainly doesn't allow for communication within one's own body or with anyone else. And so how does your work in relationship kind of maneuver around that? Because I think it just pops in all over the place lots of times when you don't expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for bringing shame into the conversation, Alan. I feel like it's a core piece here. For me, it's where doing this work in community really matters, because let's say I'm in a relationship with someone and we're in some kind of conflict where shame gets evoked for me. And then all of a sudden I can't even hear what this person's saying anymore. So where it's really helpful for me to have other people to go to feel like I can be supported in kind of getting reset and reoriented so that I'm not just lost in my shame and I can get reset and re-engage with this conversation. And it's helpful to do that in some ways in a close enough community that the people I'm connecting with are not just on my team, but in some ways they're on this person's team too, if that makes sense. So like, I mean, I have a concrete example of that where last summer I was working with someone who got really frustrated with me and how I was showing up at work and had some feedback to give to me. And it really hit some points of shame for me. And I invoked a couple of other friends to be like, can we talk about this? Because I feel like I heard half of what they said, but I don't think I heard all of it. And I want to hear it. I want to be able to actually take in what was shared as much as possible so that I can learn from it and not cause harm in the same way again. Or understand more about what happened. And so again, this is where being in community for me helps get out of the shame, because shame really likes to be in secret. And just that opportunity to slow it down and be like, no, we're still going to talk about this, and I'm still going to like show up and be in conversation about it, just with people who feel a little bit easier to do that with, was really healing for me and for other people in the space. So that's what I can offer. But I think there's a lot more to say about shame in this whole conversation. So thank you for that. I'm seeing the time is already somehow 6:27. So there's a lot more that can be shared here, but I'm glad that we got to dig into this conversation a little bit here in this space, so that could kind of get a feeling for what the questions and curiosity are here. I'm going to just drop in the chat. If you're curious in talking with Renee and I some more, here's the, if you know other people who might be interested, the Facebook event and website registration link are there. It's through East Bay Meditation Center. So it's pay what you can, Donna. So would love to see you there if that's of interest to you. And yeah, just really appreciate and support you all in thinking about like what it means to be, and your community is really a cohesive one. So thinking about what it means to be in relationship together and be a space that really can support feedback, things like feedback, accountability, boundaries, conflict as needed. So appreciating you all.
Dawn, thank you. Thank you so much for that talk. So let's sit together for a minute as we close.